Hello, I'm Angela and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 12th of November 2025.
Hello and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Angela, Ian, Mohammed, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. We have all the latest news for the Black Country, including some transport updates for the region's metro and buses. With this week marking Remembrance Day, we have a Did You Know section from Roger and quiz with Mina all about the tradition of the poppy, as well as a regional feature remembering a forgotten roll of honour from the Great War. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. After another dramatic weekend of football action, we have all the latest news for Wolves and West Brom. And we have all the latest seasonal hints and tips from the gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine. Local news to start with, though, with me, Angela and Ian.
Now then, have you noticed anything different with your bus journey? Well, last week, National Express West Midlands warned of diversions to 7 bus services as construction works in Wolverhampton city centre got underway. The works will see the closure of Cleveland Street between Cleveland Passage and Summer Row, with the works expected to take place from last Monday, November the 3rd to Friday, November the 21st. Closure is to make way for footway construction works, with the National Express West Midlands services 1, 3, 4, 10, 10A, 711 and 736, all being diverted during this time. A full list of diversions is as follows. Service 1. Heading towards Dudley, buses will divert from Chapel Ash via Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street, to rejoin the normal line of route. Heading towards Tetnall Wood, buses will follow the normal line of route. Service 3, heading towards Ford Houses. Buses will divert from Chapel Ash via Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street to rejoin the normal line of route. Heading towards Castlecroft, buses will follow the normal line of route. Service 4, heading towards I-54. Buses will divert from Chapel Ash via Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street to rejoin the normal line of route. Heading towards Spring Hill, buses will follow the normal line of route. Services 10 and 10A, heading towards Wolverhampton. Buses will divert from Chapel Ash via Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street to rejoin the normal line of route. Heading towards Purton and Pattingham, buses will follow the normal line of route. Services 7-11, heading towards Wolverhampton. Buses will divert from Chapel Ash via Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street to rejoin the normal line of route. Heading towards Compton Park Schools, Buses will follow the normal line of route. Service 763, heading towards Wolverhampton. Buses will divert from Waterloo Road via Ring Road St Andrews, Chapel Ash Island, Ring Road St Mark's, School Street, Pitt Street, Worcester Street, Temple Street, Summer Row and Cleveland Street to rejoin the normal line of route, heading towards St Regis Church of England Academy. Buses will follow the normal line of route. For more information on the diversions, visit the National Express West Midlands website.
From our buses to the Metro now, where fares for passengers who use the tram service in the West Midlands are set to increase in the new year. Midland Metro Limited, MML, have proposed modest price rises to help cover increased running costs and ensure the service can be sustainable in the future. Members of the West Midlands Combined Authority Board will be asked to approve the fare increases when they meet on Friday, November the 14th. MML bosses have assured passengers revenue from ticket sales will be invested back into the service for further enhancements. They added people with concessionary passes will not be affected by the rises and fare increases have been kept below the rate of inflation. A report to board said single ticket prices will increase by between 20 pence and 50 pence and day tickets will go up by 30 pence on short distance trips and 50 to 70 pence on longer distance trips. Season tickets will increase by 10%. If agreed, a Zone 1 single ticket will go from £2.30 to £2.50, while a Zone 1 weekly pass will increase from £12.20 to £13.40. Other price increases include a single ticket for Zone 1 to 2 rising from £3.20 to £3.50, a peak day ticket, Zone 1 to 2, increasing from £4.70 to £5.20, and a month ticket Zone 1-2-2 rising to £61.90, £5.60 more than the current price. MML bosses said a number of major developments to enhance the network will come to fruition over the next 12 months. These include the opening of the first phase of the Birmingham East Side extension and the first phase of the Black Country line to Dudley Town Centre opening next year. A major £76 million upgrade of the Wednesbury depot to help cater for increased metro services is also currently underway. A spokesperson for West Midlands Metro said, "A decision to increase fares is never taken lightly, but these modest price rises will help us to meet increased running costs while ensuring the future sustainability of the metro." The past few years have seen massive investments in the region's tram network as we prepare to connect even more communities across Birmingham and the Black Country. And we would like to assure customers that revenue from ticket sales will continue to be reinvested into further service enhancements. Since 2023, metro fares have increased well below the rate of inflation, and the tram continues to offer excellent value for money when compared to other modes of transport. Furthermore, nearly one in five people who use the tram with a concessionary pass will be unaffected by these changes.
Up next, we have the Beacon update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hello and welcome to your Beacon update for this week. I'm Mo with all the latest from across Beacon. We have a packed couple of minutes of exciting news, successes, and ways for you to get involved. First up, have your say. Are you someone living with a physical or sensory disability? We're inviting you to join the very first Dudley Physical and Sensory Disability Partnership Board. Come along to the Queen's Cross Network in Dudley on Wednesday, the 26th of November 2025, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon for the inaugural meeting. It is a friendly, in-person event where you can meet others with lived experience, share your views, and help shape the future of disability support in Dudley. Everyone is welcome. Just bring your voice and your ideas. The venue is the Queen's Cross Network, Wellington Road, Dudley, DY1 1RB. Next up, a report on our recent success. What a brilliant time we had at the Beacon Children's Halloween Spooky Holiday Club on the 28th of October. A massive thank you to all the wonderful children, young people, parents, siblings, and carers who joined us. We absolutely love seeing all the amazing spooky crafts and creativity and hearing the laughter during our activities at the Cherry Street Send and Sensory Hub. It is so important to us to offer fun, free and accessible spaces for our children and young people living with sight loss in the community. Seeing everyone getting creative and enjoying the festive spirit was truly the best treat. We can't wait for more fun at the next Children's Holiday Club. Next up, what could you do in 30 minutes? Scroll social media? Watch half an episode of Strictly? Make a cuppa? Or you could make someone's day. Our Beacon Befrienders spend just 30 minutes a week on a friendly phone call to someone living with sight loss, offering company, conversation, and connection. Could you be one of them? For example, every week, Katie spends 30 minutes chatting to Beryl. They talk about gardening, Strictly Come Dancing, and life. As Katie says, quote, I always end our calls feeling happy and uplifted. 30 minutes, two smiles, one lovely friendship. A huge thank you to everyone who joined us last Tuesday to celebrate our incredible Beacon Befrienders. They make such a difference for people at risk of loneliness, helping to brighten someone's day. We would also like to recognize the kindness and commitment to making this service so special. In Befriending Week news, congratulations to our wonderful volunteer befriender, Shirley, who was recently nominated for a Community Action Award in Dudley. This nomination reflects Shirley's kindness, dedication, and the incredible difference she makes. We couldn't be prouder. Just half an hour a week can bring friendship, comfort, and connection to someone who needs it. To find out how to sign up, please call 019-02-880-111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Next is a huge congratulations to our local hero, Sylvia. We are absolutely thrilled that the incredible Sylvia Ennifer, 83 years old, from Wolverhampton, has been named the West Midlands Local Hero in the first ever Churchill Living Local Hero Awards. Sylvia is a true inspiration and a massive driving force behind the historic J.W. Hunt Cup, an amateur charity football tournament that raises vital funds for the Beacon Centre for the Blind. Back in 2020, with matches being cancelled, Sylvia single-handedly wrote 60 letters to raise a crucial £4,000 to keep the cup alive. Thanks to heroes like Sylvia, the J.W. Hunt Cup has now raised an astonishing over £450,000 since 1926. Sylvia is determined to reach a monumental £500,000 by the centenary in 2026. This generous recognition from Churchill Living, which includes a £1,000 donation, takes them one step closer. Please join us in celebrating Sylvia's passion and amazing efforts. Next is a huge thank you to our incredible trustees. National Trustee Week ran between the 3rd and 7th of November, and we're celebrating the fantastic people who guide, challenge, and champion Beacon. We are proud that 43% of our trustees have lived experience of sight loss. Their lived insight and passion ensure our decisions are always putting our community first. We couldn't do it without them. Next up is my story. Get set, go full time. A year of success. What a year it's been, from intern to communications officer. I'm incredibly proud to celebrate a massive milestone. I've officially completed my 9-month internship journey with Thomas Pocklington Trust and Beacon and transitioned to my full-time role as Beacon's communications officer. The 5th of November actually marks 1 year since I first started. My journey has been truly amazing, and I'm so happy to be here at Beacon. From mastering independent travel for work, to bringing my unique, invaluable perspective and creative thinking to the communications team. This is what focused success looks like. I'm so grateful for all the support I've received during this internship. If you want to replicate this success, if you or someone you know is starting their career with sight loss, you need to read my story. It's packed with inspiration and, most importantly, my top 10 essential tips. I've organized them so that you have a step-by-step guide for conquering the UK job market. Read the blog at https://beaconvision.org/get-set-go-full-time-my-internship-and-top-tips.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
Patients needing urgent and emergency care services at New Cross Hospital will be offered more holistic support beyond their immediate medical need as part of a new pilot scheme which rolled out last Tuesday. Nurses Rongi Corbita and Christina Overton have become the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust's first specialist support navigators, with the role believed to be the first of its kind in the West Midlands. Aligned to the NHS 10-year plan, the scheme looks to keep people safe and well at home, ensuring they receive help in the community to prevent any future trips to hospital. The duo will be supporting patients with long-term recovery from issues such as addiction and homelessness. The roles have been developed as a partnership between RWT and the City of Wolverhampton Council. Christian explained, "For many patients who turn up at the emergency department, there's often more going on for them than the initial broken bone or injury. We're here to provide a service to those who are vulnerable so they can make positive, lasting changes. Because if you can't signpost to the necessary agencies, then there's a risk the door of ED becomes a revolving door with any underlying issues that potentially led them there in the first place, never being properly addressed." The support will vary from leaflets with details of local charities and agencies to advocating for patients during telephone or in-person appointments. Rongi added, "It's a non-judgmental service with a psychological, social approach to care, which means we're looking at the bigger picture for that person and not just the medical side. Patients should be able to feel comfortable to confide in us, as only then can we point them in the right direction." Working alongside ED staff and their existing pathways, Rongi and Christina will raise awareness of the key signs to look out for and the important questions to ask, helping to identify any issues relating to substance use, housing, financial well-being, and more. Rongi, who has a background in clinical education and intensive care, explains how he is excited to have an impact on a wider scale. He explained, "I used to see 6 or 7 patients a day on the intensive care unit, but this means I can help in much larger numbers. For me, an interaction is already an intervention. You don't need to have superpowers, you just need to be willing to listen. I'm keen to get started." Christina, who has worked in the Trust's emergency department for 14 years, said, "I personally am looking forward to building strong relationships with the patients and having that quality time to pause and just have a conversation. The team will monitor for trends and patterns and will adjust their support accordingly, while patients will be asked to feedback on if they felt heard and understood by the healthcare professionals." Carolyn Musgrave, Drugs and Alcohol Team Lead and Specialist Support Navigator Lead, said the NHS 10-year plan focuses on collaboration between national bodies and local services to enhance patient care, increase efficiency, and address health inequalities. "Well done, RWT, in tandem with City of Wolverhampton Council, for pioneering this work. Councillor Obeida Ahmed, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "We are delighted to be funding this important pilot, which directly supports the ambitions of our Health and Wellbeing Board to create a fairer, healthier Wolverhampton. When people come to A&E in crisis, it is often because the underlying pressures in their lives have not been addressed early enough. By tackling the wider causes of poor health, including housing, finances, addiction, and mental well-being, we are not only supporting individuals, but also building resilience in our communities and reducing health inequality across the city. The service will operate from Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Across to the NHS Foundation Trust in Dudley now, as the Trust is considering moving a range of outpatient appointments from Russell's Hall Hospital to community locations whenever possible. The plans will be discussed at a meeting of Dudley's Council Social Care and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee this week. A report for the committee says adult blood testing has been provided at Maryhill since 2022. However, the Trust has now moved to a larger unit with four rooms to deliver outpatient clinics. From November the 24th, children's blood testing, paediatric phlebotomy, will move to the centre from Russell's Hall's Children's Outpatients Department. The report said, "We estimate that around 900 attendances per month will be affected by this move." Children attending outpatient clinics at Russell's Hall who require a blood test as part of their consultation will continue to receive this at the hospital. The move only affects children who require a blood test and nothing else, for example, because they've been requested to get a blood test by their GP. The Maryhill Paediatric Phlebotomy Service will be open Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Trust is also planning to operate four rainbow maternity clinics at Maryhill for families who experience pregnancy and neonatal bereavement. Other services to be offered at Maryhill include glucose tolerance testing, paediatric epilepsy clinics, paediatric diabetes clinics, and a transition hub, paediatric gastroenterology clinics, and general paediatrics and neonate clinic. The clinics are all expected to be in place at Maryhill by February 2026. Clinics for the same services will continue at Russell's Hall, allowing patients to attend the most convenient location. The Trust delivered 466,000 outpatient appointments in 2023-24, with 65%, 300,000, taking place at Russell's Hall. The report for councillors said, "In view of the limited scale of services relocating to Maryhill and the majority of maternity and paediatric outpatients are not affected by this change, we believe that this does not constitute a substantial service change." Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's Remembrance Day flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. How many silk poppies were sold on the first poppy day? Question 2. How is the British Legion keeping up with the times? Question 3. What does etiquette say about the leaf on a remembrance poppy? Question 4. Where in the country is the poppy factory? Question 5. In what year was Remembrance Day moved to a Sunday? And finally, question 6. Where was the first Armistice Day held? I will be back with you later with the answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. Ivyleaf You Care Home in Starbridge is delighted to invite the local community to join its brand new Knit and Natter Club, a warm, welcoming group that meets every Sunday and Tuesday at 3 p.m. at the home. The Knit and Natter sessions are open to everyone, whether you're an experienced knitter, a complete beginner, or simply looking for friendly conversation over a cuppa. It's the perfect opportunity to meet new people, share skills, and enjoy some creative relaxation in a cosy social setting. Our residents love knitting and chatting with others, and we wanted to open that joy to the wider community, said Molly Jo Burrows, Activities Coordinator at Ivyleaf You Care Home. It's all about connection, creativity, and companionship. Everyone's welcome. The sessions take place in the comfortable lounge at Ivyleaf You Care Home, with all materials provided, though participants are encouraged to bring their own projects if they wish. Refreshments are served and all ages are invited to join in. Whether you want to learn a new hobby, make friends, or just enjoy a good natter, the Knit and Natter Club, hosted by Anne Davies, is a great way to spend an afternoon. For more information, you can contact Ivyleaf You Care Home on 01384 888 920.
Now then, here's a little something that may be worth having a natter about. Nearly 50 years after a Black Country band split, their long-awaited debut album is finally on its way. The Montanas, a pop group from the Dudley and Wolverhampton areas who disbanded in 1978, will see their first LP released in early November. Despite success in the 1960s, including the American chart entry You've Got to Be Loved, the band never released a full album during their career. Johnny Jones, the band's lead singer and a founder member, said, "I was always proud of the band because the Montanas were ultra professional in everything we did." The new release, titled The Montanas, A's and B's, 1965-1970, will feature 19 tracks and is being issued by BGO Records. It follows a double CD collection of the group's recordings released by BGO 3 years ago. The LP will include British turntable hits such as Chow Baby and Let's Get a Little Sentimental, as well as two songs previously only released in America. Austin Powell, who now manages the group's business affairs, said, "The release of this LP is proof positive that the Montanas' music has stood the test of time. The Monts always had a great reputation, and it's still a mystery why several of their records never made the charts when they were first released."
Up next, let's have another Beacon update.
Next up, just 1 month to go, the countdown is on to Wolverhampton's most festive fundraiser, the Beacon Santa Run, in West Park on Sunday the 7th of December. Grab your Santa suits, round up the family, and get ready for a 5K event filled with festive fun, all while supporting people living with sight loss across the region. Sign up now before Santa's sleigh is full. www.beaconvision.org/Santa-run-2025. Next up is a quick reminder about essential tree work this Friday, the 14th of November. The necessary felling of the Rarewood Ash Tree outside the Beacon Centre is scheduled and has to be done because of safety reasons. We want to ensure that we'll keep the area accessible for people living with sight loss attending our centre while the work is carried out. You'll hear some noise, and a few parking spaces and the footpath will be temporarily cordoned off. But the centre and the shop are still open for business as usual. Thank you for your patience. Next is a big happy birthday. What a milestone. We love celebrating Beacon Court resident Ruth's 100th birthday last Friday. She enjoyed a wonderful day surrounded by flowers, cards, including a very special one from the King. Happy birthday, Ruth. On Remembrance Sunday, the 9th of November, the Beacon Centre for the Blind paused to remember the brave servicemen and women who made the ultimate sacrifice to defend our freedom. We will remember them. Next, we had a great time at the Older People's Information Fair with MP Mike Wood on Friday. Thanks to everyone who came to say hello. If you missed us, you can always reach out to any of our team about any information and all of Beacon services by calling 019 02 880 111 or by emailing inquiries@beaconvision.org. Next is some news for your well-being. Health on the Shelf is coming to the Maryhill Shopping Centre this Wednesday, the 12th of November, from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. We're inviting you to drop by for a special health event where you can access free advice, friendly chats, and meet a wide range of support organizations. You can also get free health checks and screenings, all in one place. There's no need to book. Just stop by and say hello. It's a great chance to take a step towards a more healthier you. And finally, on a more solemn note, yesterday was Armistice Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. At 11 a.m. yesterday morning, we observed a powerful two-minute silence to mark the moment the First World War ended in 1918. At the Beacon Centre for the Blind, we honour those who gave their lives in service. It remains a vital time for solemn reflection on the devastating impact of war and the enduring importance of peace. We honour their courage, their sacrifice, and the loved ones they left behind. We will remember them. That's it for this week's Beacon Update. Thank you for listening, and join me again next week where we'll have even more about everything that's been happening here at Beacon. But until then, goodbye.
Next up, we have another block of local news. A Woman of War silhouette has been unveiled in Sedgley as part of a remembrance ceremony. Sedgley Townswomen's Guild has commissioned two new pieces in recognition of women who volunteered, served and worked during the war effort. The short ceremony took place at Sedgley War Memorial, led by Reverend Cooksey, and included readings and songs from local community groups as well as children from Queen Victoria School. More than 200 knitted and crocheted poppies are also on display at the memorial. These have been created by hand by members of the Sedgley Townswomen's Guild as well as their friends and relatives. Karen Moore, Sedgley Townswomen's Guild, said, "Sedgley has had a Tommy silhouette in recognition of soldiers who paid the ultimate price for our borough and country at the memorial for many years. As a women's group, we also wanted to get female silhouettes to remember the astounding efforts and sacrifices that women made during wartime, and I'm delighted to see them going on display this weekend." Councillor Damien Caulfield, Dudley Council's Champion for Armed Forces, said, "It's fantastic to see these two silhouettes being installed at the Sedgley War Memorial ahead of the community ceremony. Over the coming days, we will all take time to remember and honour the women and men who made huge sacrifices for our freedom." Knitted poppy displays from local Townswomen's Guild groups can also be seen at war memorials in Coseley, Woodsetton and Lower Gornal.
Adams, George Norman, Captain, South Staffs, Adcock, H. Norman, 2nd Lieutenant, 1st East Kents. Aston, Charles Hendry, Private, 2nd and 5th East Lancs. And so on and so on. Dozens, scores, hundreds of names alphabetically all the way to Sergeant Harry Yates of the 1 to 6th South Staffs. They were the borough of Wolverhampton's fallen from the Great War, all remembered by the city's official war memorial. While the names do not actually appear on the cenotaph in the shadow of St. Peter's Church, they were listed in the programme published to accompany the unveiling of the memorial by the Admiral of the Fleet, Sir Doveton Sturdy, on Thursday, November 2nd, 1922. The scale of the sacrifice was huge, running to around 900 men from the Wolverhampton area who had given their lives, and even then the list concluded with an appeal for people to come forward with information about anyone who might have been missed. Of these, there will have been many, a modern roll of honour compiled as part of commemorations of the centenary of the end of the Great War, had the names of 4,272 Wolverhampton men and women. These included people who lost their lives contributing to the war effort in some way, such as in accidents in munitions factories. An original programme kept in the Express and Star archive outlines the proceedings, starting with a procession from the town hall, a guard of honour comprising soldiers of the 6th Battalion of the South Staffordshire Regiment at the foot of St. Peter's Steps, and a ceremony beginning with the singing of O God Our Help in Ages Past, and including a minute silence and the sounding of the last post. The programme has the names of the War Memorial Committee, which was chaired by the Mayor, Councillor James Thompson. But our copy includes something else of historic interest, an account of the genesis of the memorial typed on Express and Star headed notepaper and inserted loose within the programme, and it shows that the project had a wider ambition to provide practical help to bereaved families.
It tells how, on May the 9th, 1921, the Mayor, Councillor Thompson, outlined a scheme which was adopted by the Town Council for the erection of a memorial on ground near the west front of St. Peter's Church at a cost of £5,000. 10% of the total subscribed after meeting the cost of the memorial should be used to form a fund for the assistance of necessitous widows and orphans or other dependents of Wolverhampton men who had fallen, or dependents of those suffering from total disablement. It was suggested by the War Memorial Committee that money left as a balance should be given one half for the provision of playing fields in the borough and half for the creation of a fund to be at the disposal of the mayor at the time being, such as existed in other towns. The mayor's fund would be to help deserving cases brought to his notice. The memorial, costing approximately £5,000, was unveiled absolutely free of debt. As it's known generally, this is only part of a scheme involving an expenditure of £20,000. It goes on to mention the part the Star itself played in banging the drum to raise money, as well as what appears to have been a direct financial contribution by the Star. Appeal in the Leader, that is the paper's editorial column, for November the 3rd. That enough money having been obtained to pay for the memorial, the public is urged to support financially the activities of the War Memorial Committee for the other objects. At the time of the opening, about £6,000 had been collected. The list of October the 11th, 1922, £5,894, no shillings, 10 pence. Express and Star, £250. John Thompson gave £1,000 subject to the whole £20,000 being raised, £250 for each completed £5,000. In a population of 100,000 people, the number of actual and prospective subscribers is fewer than 200. At this date, abstracting the Thompson's £1,000, the desired sum of £5,000 to pay for the memorial had not been raised. For some reason, the amount, which must have been written some years after the unveiling, included significant research into whether there had been mentions of a War Memorial Committee, which is curious, as its members are named in the 1922 programme, and there's a plaque on the memorial itself which mentions the committee. A search of the files from January 1921 to February 1926 has been made, and apart from the extracts quoted, no reference of any sort to the War Memorial Committee has been found. It concludes, at the time of the suggested War Memorial, funds were running to assist the unemployed, the number of whom was increasing every week. The War Memorial Collection had no publicity from us, except for the publishing of a final list in October 1922. Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello, everyone. Well, I hope that you're all as well as can be. This week, I found out a few details about poppies and remembrance, as it's this time of year, and I just couldn't let it pass. So here we go, then. Now, did you know that? The Royal British Legion formed in 1921 and ordered 9 million silk versions of the flowers, which were sold on November the 11th that year. It was the first ever poppy appeal, which raised £106,000, a significant amount of money for that time of year, and works out to be over 5.3 million in today's money. On average, the poppy appeal raises over £50 million annually, mostly in cash, but the British Legion is keeping up with the times and has asked the public to donate online or by using contactless payments where it's available or when offered. And if you wear a poppy, it really doesn't matter if you wear it on the right or the left. However, etiquette has it that the leaf should be set at the 11 o'clock position to signify the hour that the guns of World War I fell silent. And the poppy factory is situated in Richmond, Surrey, and is manned by disabled military veterans, as it has been since its creation in 1921 in London and since in 1926 in Richmond. Each year, over 11 million poppies are made, 135,000 wreaths and 1.1 million remembrance symbols. The British Legion provides every sort of support for ex-service personnel, from employment to housing, and counselling for any aspect of help that's needed. And originally, Poppy Day was called Armistice Day and was always on the 11th of November, the day World War I ceased. In Britain, beginning in 1939, the two-minute silence was moved to the Sunday nearest to the 11th of November in order not to interfere with wartime production. Should 11th of November fall on a weekday, and so it became Remembrance Sunday. The very first Armistice Day was held at Buckingham Palace on the 10th of November 1919, commencing with King George V hosting a banquet of honour to the President of the French Republic. The first official Armistice Day events were subsequently held in the grounds of Buckingham Palace on the morning of 11th of November 1919, which included the first two-minute silence as a mark of respect. Well then, whatever the day is called, it's a fairly solemn time, but nevertheless, I think it's an important day for us all to bear in mind. You know, it always makes me remember when I was 10 and I stood with my scout troop with cold drizzle on my little legs for the service at the war memorial, and I was sitting there wishing that I was somewhere warm. Anyway, I'm off now, and I'll just say bye for now. So till next week then, ta-ra a bit, ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. After a week of sunshine and showers, things are set to become a lot more settled. Unfortunately, with a lot more rain over the next few days. The low UV levels shall remain with sunrise and sunset times as follows. 7:35 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:10 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, Friday 14th of November is predictably wet and windy, with heavy rain expected and a moderate breeze from the east. Temperatures will actually still be quite mild for November at 13. Moving into the weekend, and the rain showers will ease off but will remain persistent over both Saturday 15th and Sunday 16th of November. The wind should also settle down to something gentler too. However, with the breeze drifting down from the north, temperatures will reflect this, struggling to reach double digits with top temperatures of 9 degrees expected. Moving into next week, and the pattern of unsettled weather shall develop, with a few sunny intervals breaking through with light rain showers and sunny spells expected from Monday 17th through to Thursday 20th of November. With a breeze beginning to drift in from the west, temperatures will continue to struggle at around 7 to 8 degrees. So, it does look like the cold weather spells are slowly creeping up on us. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Albion got back to winning ways and ended their four-game run without a win against Oxford. Having fallen behind to a goal from former loanee Will Lankshear, Albion levelled up as Oxford scored an own goal before Orne Hegebo won it for them late on. Express and Star's Albion correspondent Johnny Drury brings three talking points to come from the game. Not vintage, but it is a win. It was another game where Albion had pressure in the first half, but it wasn't turned into real clear openings. There was probably one there in that first period, but it was a sense of we have been here before when it got to the break. They were booed off at the break, and when they failed to go ahead and Will Lankshear put Oxford ahead, then it threatened to turn a little bit toxic. The boos rang out and a chant of "You don't know what you're doing" came from a part of the ground. But 3 minutes and an own goal later, and the momentum was back with Albion. They went on to win the game and hold out at the end. Albion fans, players and Ryan Mason will know that it wasn't top draw and there is a long way to go. But after what happened in recent weeks and the lack of goalmouth action and goals, it is a result that relieves a bit of pressure. That is what Hegebo can do. Hegebo has earned praise while also copping a bit of criticism from Albion fans. His hold-up play early in the season was impressive, even if the goals have not flowed. There has been a bit of frustration that he had only scored 2 goals in all competitions before this game. Hegebo himself will have been more frustrated than anyone else, but what his winner showed against Oxford is just what he can do. When he has the chance to make those runs, get into those areas, and get on the end of crosses, he will score goals. His change of run and awareness to time his run for Price cross is why Albion signed Hegebo. Yes, he could have done things better, I'm sure, during his first few months, but he hasn't had the service and hasn't been able to get into those goal-scoring positions. When he has the chances to do that, then he will score goals. He has shown that, and hopefully this is a turning point. Criticism is right, but praise is needed too. Albion and Mason have quite rightly taken criticism in recent weeks, when the wins and certainly goals have dried up. That is going to happen, and a lot of it has been correct. But it is only right to praise Albion and Mason when things do go well. Like I have said, it was not vintage, and Albion are far off where they should be. However, one thing they showed earlier in the season, and did show against Oxford, is real character. It would have been easy to fold when Oxford went 1-0 up, and it turned. But they didn't. They showed that grit to dig in, and see it out, like they did against the likes of Blackburn and Stoke earlier in the season. There is a long way to go, however, it is right to praise them after a difficult few weeks. From a difficult few weeks for the Albion to the disappointment of a desperately bad few months for Wolves. Despite it being a Premier League fixture, Wolves' trip to Chelsea felt like a means to an end, as Wolves' winless run stretched to 11 Premier League games following a second half capitulation and 3-0 defeat at Chelsea. The club now have 27 matches remaining to save their season. But with Rob Edwards coming in as head coach and an international break now upon us, this match felt like the end of one era and the start of another. Whether Edwards is able to pull off a miracle is another thing for another day. The 42-year-old former defender played more than 100 times for Wolves between 2004 and 2008. And went on to coach in the academy and briefly become interim head coach of the first team in 2016. Now, the Telford-born boss will return to the club in the hope of dragging them out of relegation trouble as he replaces Vito Pereira as the new head coach. Discussions are being finalised over his backroom team, and Edwards is set to be unveiled as the new boss this week. Wolves originally moved for former head coach Gary O'Neill, but after he turned it down, they quickly turned their attentions to Edwards, who has plenty of admirers in the Wolves hierarchy and has come close to joining the club in recent years. Middlesbrough were desperate to keep him, and they originally rejected Wolves' official approach last Thursday, before Edwards' pre-match press conference was cancelled and he did not take training. Edwards was then stood down from managing Borough in their match against Birmingham last Saturday, as the Championship side gave their head coach permission to speak to Wolves over the vacancy. The two clubs reached an agreement over the compensation due, believed to be in the region of £2 million, freeing Edwards to make the move to Wolves that he was keen on. Wolves had spoken to Edwards' representatives earlier in the week, as they attempted to poach him for the role of head coach. As a result of this ongoing saga, Borough then accused Wolves of breaking the Premier League rules when a club source told The Telegraph, "Unfortunately, Wolves have behaved at a standard less than we expect, and we believe their conduct is in breach of Premier League regulations." But permission was eventually given for the parties to speak over the role and come to an agreement. Following Wolves' 3-0 defeat to Chelsea on Saturday, under interim boss James Collins, Edwards' first game in charge will be Crystal Palace at Molineux after the international break. Wolves are planning to make money available in January to aid the club's fight against relegation, while it is understood they see Edwards' appointment as a long-term project that could help them bounce back if they are relegated.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. How many silk poppies were sold on the first poppy day? And the answer here is 9 million. Question 2. How is the British Legion keeping up with the times? And the answer here is by contactless payments. Question 3. What does etiquette say about the leaf on a remembrance poppy? And the answer, it should be placed on the 11 o'clock position behind the flower. Question 4. Where in the country is the poppy factory? And the answer, Richmond, Surrey. Question 5. In what year was Remembrance Day moved to a Sunday? And the answer, 1939. And finally, question 6. Where was the first Armistice Day held? And the answer here is Buckingham Palace. Did you get them all right? I'm sure you did. If not though, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
Now then, here's something rosy for you. Local businessmen David Austin and Ian Bonzer have completed the purchase of the historic Patsall Park estate, pledging to restore the 214-acre site to its former glory and breathe new life into one of the region's most notable heritage landscapes. The impressive estate includes Lancelot Capability Brown designed grounds, a Grade 2 listed Doric temple, a redundant hotel, and a former golf course, all set within a quintessentially English landscape of lakes, woodland, and parkland. Renowned Shropshire Rose breeder David Austin and UK Golf Federation President Ian Bonzer both have deep roots in the area and share a passion for preserving and revitalising local heritage. Together they plan to develop Patsall Park into a multifunctional destination that celebrates its natural beauty and rich history. Patsall Park holds a fascinating history and an abundance of potential, said David Austin. We're proud to be taking on the stewardship of such an important local landmark and are committed to restoring it sensitively for future generations. Ian Bonzer added, our vision is to honour the past while creating a sustainable future for Patsall Park. one that brings together leisure, heritage, and community in a truly special setting. The estate's grounds epitomise the work of Capability Brown, whose renowned landscapes include Blenheim Palace, Warwick Castle, Chatsworth, and Highclere Castle. The property also features a fishing lodge and an additional multi-purpose building near the entrance, providing further scope for future development. Dating back to before the Norman Conquest, Patzell Park's history is interwoven with that of the region, with records of a settlement in the Domesday Book. The acquisition by Austin and Bonza will continue this rich vein by creating a valuable space for the local community to enjoy.
And staying with the breathtaking beauty of South Staffordshire, where a rare species of spider known as Britain's mini tarantula has been sighted at Kimber Edge, which is managed by the National Trust. A sighting of the purseweb spider has been made by a visitor to the South Staffordshire beauty spot, the first ever recording in the county, just in time for Halloween. The secretive tube-building spider, often called Britain's mini tarantula, has been found living in the heathland soils of Kingsford Heath, where a diverse landscape of rare lowland heathland has been created to support nature and wildlife. Kimber Edge visitor Matthew Rigby discovered the spider in an area which was restored to its former heathland landscape 20 years ago by Worcestershire County Council, and which continues to be managed and cared for by the National Trust. Andy Perry, the Trust Nature Conservation Advisor, said, "This is a significant find for the region. The purseweb spider is a nationally scarce species that doesn't appear to have been recorded in Staffordshire or Worcestershire before. It also goes to show the important role that our visitors can play by recording and sharing their wildlife sightings with us." Heathland, one of the UK's rarest habitats, is characterised by wide open landscape, dominated by scattered trees and low-growing shrubs, such as gorse, heather and grasses, and sandy soil, which provides an ideal habitat for invertebrates, including the rare purseweb spider. National Trust Countryside Manager Ewan Chapman said, "The purseweb spider is a fascinating yet elusive species. It spends most of its life underground, hiding in a silk-lined burrow capped with a camouflage purse of web. Unsuspecting insects walking over the surface are ambushed and dragged below, the stuff of Halloween nightmares." The discovery of the spider is regionally significant, as well as being a good indicator that our work to restore the heath on Kimber Edge is really paying off. We are now hoping to restore an area of conifer plantation, which was previously an area of open habitat on the Worcestershire side of Kimber Edge in Blakeshall Common. This phase of work will help us stop the extinction of rare species on the site and hopefully attract wildlife back to the heathland habitats we're planning to restore. The National Trust rangers at Kimber Edge care for and maintain the heathland by grazing livestock and cutting vegetation to control invasive plants. Without such interventions, the landscape quickly becomes overtaken by bracken, scrub or woodland, and the rare habitat which supports lots of wildlife is lost. Now, from the glorious grounds of Kimber Edge, Patzell Park and splendour of David Austin roses to the delights and joys of our own back gardens. Trees and woodlands add so much to our lives and need to be preserved as a refuge from our lives that increasingly centre on screen time. In our own gardens, there's no rest in November, with many tasks required to prepare for winter, plant next year's roses and cover delicate plants for protection. So let's head over to our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine for the latest seasonal hints and tips on what needs attention in the garden this month.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine, based in Milton Keynes. Stand tall for our trees. If you want to reconnect with yourself and press pause on the stress in your life, a walk amongst nature is the easiest way to perk yourself up. It's a simple, free way to exercise, and if done regularly, studies show that it can reduce the risk of poor mental health. More than ever, we need to learn to appreciate the wonder of nature, and yet we seem to find more reasons than ever to justify the destruction of our green spaces. The deliberate act of vandalism of one of the country's most photographed trees, the sycamore gap tree, saw the collective anger of the nation cut loose. The sycamore gap tree is an iconic example of a tree lost to stupidity. But across the country, people justify the removal of trees every day. When it was announced lime trees on the walks in Wellingborough were to be felled to make way for work on a dual carriageway to begin, protests ensued. Just the same as when we dismantle ancient buildings that have stood proud for centuries, replacing them with modernistic travesties, there is no way back once a tree has been removed from the landscape. What is the best way to mark such losses? By engaging the next generation in the importance of trees. By nurturing an appreciation in our children so that they care enough to make a change for the better. This autumn, take that walk in the woods with the family. Harvest some of those acorns or conkers and help your children grow their own saplings. It's a great way to spend family time and a welcome break from staring at those screens we carry everywhere with us. Children will get a real sense of satisfaction as their saplings grow, and in some small way you'll be helping to counteract some of the devastation that is now all too frequent. And with Christmas coming, why not swap that cheap bottle of chockies you offer and instead give the gift of a tree? The National Trust is one of many charities offering the service, and as its website says, quite simply, trees are essential for life. They clean the air we breathe, lock up carbon as they grow, and provide homes for wildlife. What could be better gift than that? And you won't need to wrap it. So how does your garden grow? Early November is the best time for autumn colour in the garden. Strong winds loosen tree stakes and ties, and those need to be checked. Damage to the bark of some ornamental and fruit trees was found. Bare root trees and roses are now available and should be stood in water before planting. Liberally sprinkle mycorrhizal fungi on them to encourage plant growth. The rows of salad greens were covered by plastic cloches, which have saved them from damage by heavy rain. They are providing additions to the school's meals. A large root of rhubarb was dug up, divided and planted elsewhere, leaving room for two short rows of broad beans, Aqua Dulce Claudia, to be fitted in, and a row of garlic cloves pressed in firmly after a mulch of fresh compost has been added. I'm also sowing sweet peas 1 centimetre deep in pots of fresh multi-purpose compost. Pelargoniums and fuchsias potted up from the garden must be kept frost-free in the greenhouse or in a cool, light room. Continuing to feed the birds and keeping the bird bath topped up is an important routine. What happened to bonfire night?
DNF soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!